Alaska, rural Alaska in particular, can be a big change for folks moving here for the first time. What's often labeled culture shock can include everything from the weather to the bugs to the price of everyday necessities found in area stores. Beyond that, Alaska can be and feel microscopically small, from a population standpoint, to people who are used to a lot more people. When I moved to Alaska in the early 90s, I was coming from central Kansas, itself not exactly sporting a reputation for being burgeoning. Still, non-Dalton and all of its 200 or so residents, coupled with no roads and distant neighboring towns, felt small and remote. Because it is. And the fellow I replaced for Lake and Penn School District in taking that job left rather abruptly because he couldn't handle the smallness and remoteness. We understand that about Alaska. Most of you listening to this not only understand it, but embrace it. It's a part of why you live here, and if you didn't like it, you'd live someplace else. A few of you may be fairly new and you're not yet sure what side of the fence you fall on. Time will eventually reveal that to you. So, why all this talk of populations? Well, I have a couple of things that have been on my mind. Hopefully it will all become clear by the end of today's episode. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. I have said many times on many forums to many audiences, including right here on Field Notes, that I believe Togiak Refuge is not only one of the most special and unique places in the refuge system, but to be found anywhere on our planet. A lot goes into that opinion, including its remote and largely untrammeled nature, and the diversity of habitat types and wildlife to be found on it. There are elements of Togiak found to greater degrees on other refuges, but not many, if any, can boast of all the things to be found here. It is truly a gem, and beyond our area, it's largely an unknown gem. To those who live here, that's probably considered a good thing. I guess in that regard, the refuge reminds me of the short story, Secret Places, by Patrick McManus. I tend to think of pretty much anything McManus writes as required reading and recommend him wholeheartedly. Because so few people really seem to know we're here, it almost feels like our little secret, doesn't it? And if millions of people were to descend on it each year, it would likely lose a lot of that feeling. So there is that, and I completely get it. But there is a balance to it. In working for the federal government, dollars are becoming tighter each year, just as they are with many of you, both with your employers and trying to make a living day to day. It's tough. Perhaps it will change in the future, perhaps not. As someone who works as an educator for a natural resources agency, I want that which I represent, the refuge, to have importance because funding goes to those things people attach value to. So even though it's great that Togiak Refuge is possibly one of the best-kept secrets in the refuge system, we also want people, beyond those who live here, knowing it's here and placing value on it. A case in point for those of us at Togiak Refuge. Togiak does not have a visitor center. We do have an office that has a small lobby that has some things of interest and serves as a point of contact with the public, but a visitor center it is not. You could make a case for us not having a visitor center by virtue of the fact that we don't receive the same level of visitation as refuges like Kenai, for example, which has hundreds of thousands of visitors that come through their doors each year. However, a recently released study that highlighted economic value of refuge visitation to local communities showed that of the 9 Alaska refuges profiled in the study, only Kenai provided more economic value than Togiak. Refuges that are more in the public eye, such as Tetlin and Kodiak, have really nice visitor centers. However, Togiak provides more economic value, so you could certainly make a case for Togiak having a visitor center. I do not share that fact to begrudge those refuges that they have visitor centers, not in the least, but to point out one example where, maybe being something of a secret, or off the beaten path, or whatever, isn't all that helpful. In fact, we are on the list to eventually have a visitor center, but given the current economic climate, we're likely going to have to be a bit patient with that. I guess what has me thinking about this is an initiative that was recently implemented by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and a number of other partners. The initiative is focused on reaching people in urban settings. It's designed to provide those populations with opportunities to connect with nature and nature-based activities. There's good reasoning behind this. More and more folks are choosing to live in an urban setting. There is nothing wrong with that. But many of those people who choose to do so, or have grown up in such a setting, have no connection to nature. Everything they know or understand comes from sources other than a first-hand experience. You've heard me talk about this previously when discussing connecting kids with nature and some of the issues leading to what can cause a disconnect, such as increased stresses on family, rising cost of participation, and, the big one, the way kids plug into technology instead of going outside. It's much of the same thing for people in urban settings. The opportunities to get out into nature don't exist, or, if they do, time or money often prevent people from taking advantage of them. Let me share a bit of what came down in the press release about this initiative. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service today announced a multifaceted urban wildlife refuge initiative to make its programs reflect the diverse perspectives, values, and cultures of America. The initiative strives to make the service's programs far more relevant to millions of Americans, 80% of whom live in big and small cities, giving them myriad ways to participate in wildlife conservation and recreation. The Urban Wildlife Refuge Initiative will provide economic benefits to hundreds of communities as new generations of city dwellers learn wildlife-dependent recreation, such as birding, fishing, hunting, hiking, canoeing, and so much more, said Service Director Dan Ash. Too many Americans have grown up without a real connection to wildlife. This initiative gives us the chance to change that. The initiative is built on four major elements. Standards of excellence for urban national wildlife refuges to help national wildlife refuges engage urban Americans in new and more effective ways. The standards are aimed at national wildlife refuges within 25 miles of urban areas with 250,000 people or more, but can also benefit refuges serving more rural communities. Urban wildlife refuge partnerships in geographically dispersed communities to expand the service's conservation programs. 8 partnerships were established in 2013, and more will be established by 2015. A director's order that authorizes and encourages all service programs to conduct cooperative fish and wildlife conservation, education, and outreach in urban communities. These areas are partnership-based lands, not managed by the service, where people can enjoy outdoor experiences that foster connections with fish and wildlife resources and promote active engagement of people in the natural world. A first-ever Urban Academy for staff and partners at the National Conservation Training Center in West Virginia. This academy actually took place at the end of September of this year. The purpose was to train staff on cultural diversity, how to overcome barriers to outdoor recreation, and create partnerships that engage new audiences in order to foster a new conservation constituency. Director Ash said, "We believe these unique urban partnerships can inspire the imagination and create a connected conservation constituency of people who are aware, understand, and support fish and wildlife conservation." It's pretty clear that one of the primary directions the service is taking in the coming years is to bridge the gap between what the service embodies and urban dwellers who really don't have the proper basis to fully understand or appreciate that. It's a good idea and one that I hope is a smashing success. Frankly, all other things aside, people getting outside and enjoying nature is a good thing. If one of the effects of that is that it benefits agencies that care for our country's natural resources, so much the better. With a shift to reaching out to urban settings, it's quite possible that Togiak Refuge will continue to be a well-kept secret in the years to come. But those of us who live here need to understand that we need others to attach value to what we have here as well. Perhaps if the effort to create a more knowledgeable population base in our nation's cities is successful, we'll be well on our way to making that happen. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.